The self and the self in all has been annihilated when all these things are one and I am that one and yet I am not, then the soul has ceased to be a soul and is self. Nirvana is reached when each finds himself to be all and rests forever in the state of not being, which is all being, indivisible and perfect. In Japan, the Tango no Seku, or Festival of the Boys, is a very important one, and is celebrated annually early in May. Among the important symbols in evidence at this time is the paper flag or kite cut in the shape of a great fish. This banner is hollow and the wind blowing into it causes the carp to become inflated and swim about in the air in a very lifelike manner. The ceremony of flying the carp had its origin in the ancient Chinese legend of the dragon carp. This fish, which swims with great resolution against the current, is considered in the Orient to be a fitting emblem of the soul of man swimming against the stream of illusion and striving to reach perfection despite the opposition of time and circumstance. The dragon carp, according to the legend, desired to swim against the Dragon Gate Rapids, and again threw its body into the air, only to be beaten back by the strength of the angry current. The gods, beholding the struggle of the carp, marveled at its patience and endurance, for it returned from each new defeat with fresh courage and determination to conquer the rapids. At last, with a supreme effort, the carp achieved its end, and when it reached the haven of the placid waters above the rapids, the body of the great fish glowed with a seal's tile splendor and became the symbol of the accomplishment of perfection. The gods gave the fish the lifespan of 1,000 years, and at the end of this period it was transfigured. Surrounded by streamers of divine radiance, it ascended into the heavens and became one of the immortals. In Buddhist symbolism, the achievement of the dragon carp, fittingly symbolizes the attainment of nirvana. Again and again the human soul seeks to stem the tide of mortal fate. Heedless of worldly ridicule and misunderstanding, the mystic patiently continues his effort to clear the rapids of his own lower nature. At last, passing through the maelstrom of the lower self, he finds peace. Illumined mind, The Universal Savior. 69. 70 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. And being transfigured ascends into the heavens to be united in nirvana with all creatures and all ages. The difference between the intellectual concept and consciousness lies in certain indescribable realities too deeply embedded in the nature of being to permit description. In the East, consciousness is likened to the lotus bud which, gradually opening, reveals more and more of itself to a wondering world, until at last the golden heart in all its splendor is disclosed. Perfect consciousness to man is perfect realization of the nature and relationship of parts to the fundamental unity in which they exist. The ability to understand the actual order of being and to see everything correctly is to be conscious. To see things as they seem to be is to be subject to the illusions of the lower mind. An example of consciousness may be briefly summed up in the statement that to know the nature of all things is to realize that all things are good. To intellectually achieve this attitude is very simple, for it is only necessary to affirm continually that the thing is good. And after a while the mind, following the line of least resistance, accepts the affirmation as a fact and no longer questions the reality of that good. But there is a vast difference between convincing oneself intellectually of the goodness of things, and becoming really conscious of the goodness of things. Consciousness is not the result of the mind convincing the self. Consciousness is the result of the self-convincing the mind. The mind incarnated in the Christos speaks of consciousness personified in the Father in these words, the Father, is greater than I. Consciousness is greater than mind, which is born out of and is a limited expression of the Supreme Parent. What then did the Emperor Julian infer when he spoke of the sacred mysteries of the seven-rayed God who lifted souls to salvation through his own nature? Simply this, no more. Can reality descend to the level of ignorance than can the lesser of anything contain the greater? If man would grasp the infinite, it is therefore necessary for him to raise himself to the level of the infinite, and as he ascends the mystery becomes ever more clear. Universal mind is the seven-rayed Savior God, through which man must ascend from the primitive state of darkened mindlessness to the perfect state of all-knowing mind. Lessness. Thus mind is indeed the Savior God who leads the soul to the comprehension of self. But, as was true of Moses, the lawgiver of Israel, it is not written that mind shall enter into the promised land. Having led the children of Israel, the parts of the inferior nature, through the wilderness of sin to the portals of the gates of peace, the mind lies down among the bleak hills of Moab, its work accomplished, and rests in the law. His face illumined by the celestial radiance reflected from the sphere he can never fully understand, mind, the universal Savior, dies at the gate of Nirvana while the souls he has redeemed pass on to perfection. Illumined mind, the universal Savior 71. Thewheel of Law. The pathway of the generating soul is here represented by a converging line of force which, piercing the wall of the auric egg, descends, as is shown on the left, into the demiurgic sphere. The soul then begins the ascent of the seven spirals, by which it is ultimately liberated and diffused back again into first cause, as shown on the right. Chapter 4. I and the Platonic system of philosophy. The dot is called the 1. The early mystics held that being should be considered the first, in that one is a being. Plato, however, maintained that the one is all being, because being is a condition of the one and consequently dependent upon it. The fallacy of terms is again apparent. Being in this sense has no connection with the thought of to be or exist, but signifies that which is with out existence in that it has neither a positive nor a negative state. Thus while Plato assails the term, he still maintains in his philosophic writings the existence of a universal state preceding the one, but denies that this universal state should be called being, intimating that it should always be assumed by the mind but no effort ever made to denominate it. The moment denomination is given, this abstract quality becomes the one, in that definition cannot possibly be applied to the absolute, the one being the highest definable state. The line out of the dot, or the one, is called the beautiful, the circle, or radius of the line, the good. In this manner is established the great Platonic triad, the one, the beautiful, and the good. The Pythagoreans conceived the number one to be before all numbers. It is called the capstone of the pyramid of numbers. All other numbers are simply aggregations of L's. 2 is 2. L's, 3, 3 I's, a million L's. Remove the one, and you destroy all numbers. Therefore it is the first and has absolute priority. The power and dignity of the number one are expressed in permanence, stability, immovability. In philosophy, beauty is a form of motion or emotion. The beautiful is an eternal flow, it is the one in motion. The good, which is the third and lowest aspect, contains or accepts into itself the nature, the inferior creation and its regent. 73. 74 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Of the beautiful, it is the manifestation of the beautiful in the sphere of creation. For example, he who has the beautiful within his own soul radiates the good and is called the good. It may be said that to be beautiful is good, also that to be good is beautiful. Consequently, that is good which contains beauty. From this Platonic definition it is apparent why the Savior gods of all nations have been symbolized as beautiful. Aesthetically considered, beauty is the redeeming power. When the human soul opens itself to the reception of beauty, it is then transmuted. Beauty is a force into the presence of which none can come and remain unmoved. Beauty is an internal force, symbolic of supersubstantial harmony manifesting through goodness. In its final analysis, good is symmetry, or the harmonious coordination of parts. In other words, that is good in which the parts work together. That individual is good in whom the natural forces function naturally. It also follows that a symmetry of parts is harmonious and harmony of parts produces a concord which is termed beautiful. According to the ancients, the world is the receptacle for the beautiful, which in turn manifests the all-knowing of the One. This lecture is to be devoted to a consideration of the world that is called good, and how, through the continual adversary, it ultimately affects the perfection and liberation of the rational nature. The world is a form, and forms are molded from matter. Matter ranges from an unrecognizable state of crystallization to an unrecognizable state of vitalization, both extremes alike in tangible because of the inability of our sense perceptions to cognize any ultimate. Form exists not only in things that can be seen but in such as can be perceived through the senses of hearing, touch, taste, and smell. Form therefore is not merely a physical body that can be seen, it may be a subtle emanation, as light or sound. A word cannot be seen and yet a word is a form. Under certain conditions drug addicts can see words coming out of people's mouths, their supersensitiveness being the result of a low form of drug-invoked psychism. A thought is not visible nor can it be held between the fingers, and yet a thought is as truly a form as is a piece of stone. The inferior